Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 28, episode 1 of the Daily Zeitgeist!
Yeah.
For April 23rd, 2018, my name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Farrah Jacko, Farrah Jacko, Brian Boo, Brian Boo.
Okay.
Are you sleeping? Are you sleeping, Brother Jack? It's not Brother John. Jack is the English version of Jack.
I don't know. I'm not well-versed in nursery rhymes.
Come on, nursery rhyme translators. That is courtesy of Aisha Sisse.
Cissé. There's an accent mark. Yes.
And I'm thrilled to be joined by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Hello, my name is Dr. Gray Thumb. That is a Cypress Hill reference. Thank you to Evan Alderson on Twitter. I should have used that last week, but you know, I just got around to looking at my
Got some leftovers.
Got some leftovers in the tank.
And we are thrilled to be joined by the hilarious writer and comedian, Charla Lauriston.
Charla.
That's when someone recognizes you at IKEA.
Yeah. I also have a twin, so that.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Identical?
Her name is Ursula, yes. Wow. So people a lot of times are like, Ursula? So I'm Charla, a.k.a. Ursula.
That's even a better a.k.a. Yeah.
It's actually
AKA
a really good a.k.a.
Ursula? What are you doing here?
I didn't know you lived in L.A.
What's your twin do?
She lives in D.C. She works for a union. She does a...
Oh, which one?
I don't know.
Oh, cool.
She does communications for them.
Commie shit.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know. Charla, what's something from your search history that is revealing about who you are?
All right. Well, this is a little gross, but I was just looking up how to heal a sty naturally.
Hey.
And last time I was on, I was talking about my Haitian-ness, my Haitian heritage, because we were talking about the left-hand scratch thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the Haitians actually have a remedy for styes, and it's garlic.
You just rub garlic on your eye?
You slice garlic and you rub it on your eye, and it gets rid of your sty. So that's a rhyming way.
Put the garlic to your eye.
And I just wanted to get rid of your sty. And I wanted to, I just was Googling it to see, you know, if there are other things to do. And garlic wasn't even on there.
Oh, really?
I didn't find it anywhere.
No.
So you got some deep cut Haitians remedies.
Are really brilliant. They're just
and it works.
Doctors. It totally works.
So I used to get styes all the time.
Wait,
when
how do you get them? It's just that thing where it looks like you have a weird
nugget under your eye. I have another rhyme for how you get them. You put your stupid dirty hand in your stupid eye and you get a sty.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, so it's like an infection.
It's basically because you're gross. Your hands are dirty. You touch
but
your
I
eye.
Used to I used to get them monthly when I lived in New York City for whatever reason, just because it's so dirty.
So gross.
Yeah, and I was also sleeping face down in the street a lot, so that probably didn't help.
I washed my face in street corner puddles.
Oh, that's not good.
Right.
Yeah.
That's funny. I got.
But yeah, I haven't gotten them ever since I left.
And what, you just got to rub just a little garlic on there.
I rub it like I did it all weekend. Like,
because your eye looks 100% to me.
No, you're not looking at the
right
eye. He's looking at the wrong eye.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah, no, it was fucked up. I couldn't even open my eye.
No, it does actually look bad.
Because I've been putting the garlic on all weekend.
I see.
And so when you put garlic on it, you just slice a piece of raw garlic and rub it on your
eye.
And rub
it on,
the part that has the juice. Because there's antimicrobial properties to garlic.
Yeah.
So just the actual juice of the garlic or whatever, or the side that and then whenever it dries up, I'll wipe my eye with a wet cloth and do it again. And and it goes down significantly. Like something I looked up was go to the hospital.
Right.
get antibiotics. And I was
That's what white people do.
Right. I got garlic.
Yeah. let me exhaust all my at-home options before I go to the... Wait, so what would be the traditional way? What if you were a scared person who knows not of the powers of garlic, what would you probably do? Just go to the doctor?
What did you say?
Warm washcloth?
Yeah,
that's what it told you to do.
Oh, it's a problem that can be solved quite easily.
It goes
just
away
in
within a week by itself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I don't know if the warm washcloth was working. One thing that I did do once that is actually sort of a weird little hack is I heated a baked potato in a microwave, and that keeps it. So a warm washcloth loses its heat in 15 seconds.
Right.
But a baked potato lasts for 30 minutes. So
nice.
I see.
So I had a baked potato inside a wet, warm towel, and somebody walked in. My roommate walked in, and I was like, oh, hey, what's up? Just rubbing a baked potato on my
eye. And he's
eye.
Like,
don't
Jack, what did I say about you touching my fucking potatoes, man?
Right, exactly. I took it off his plate and put it on my eye. Charlotte, what's something that is underrated?
I don't know if anyone else, I feel like a lot of people might feel like this, but I was eating some Indian vegetarian food over the weekend, and I was just like, why isn't this like the... known as the best food in the world. Like
Indian vegetarian
right. food is the best food in the world.
So what
Nobody
happened? What are you
talks
eating?
About
what are you,
it.
Tell me what's the dish you were eating and when this
we
realization
had
hit
some,
you?
Some dal, some lentils.
Love the dal.
Garlicky, spicy, but not too spicy. You know, I think that's another thing. People like I don't know like if people just can't take spice at all, but like it's just good spice.
And you are here on behalf of the garlic industry, Chris.
I'm here
because
big garlic. I'm here for
time.
Big garlic.
Yeah, right, exactly. It's the second your first
the
two things
time
have
I've
been
I commend
garlic.
You for not yet. Like really into garlic.
I know. I'm surprised you didn't use your
it's
AKA.
It's good for your
garlic,
body.
Garlic lorist.
If you want to be healthy, eat some garlic.
For sure.
They made this thing called dokla, which is made out of gram flour. I think that's like chickpea flour, maybe.
Okay.
But it's like this spongy, and it's like colored with a turmeric, this spongy yellow bread, basically.
Okay.
Oh, that
and
sounds
like,
amazing.
They like sprinkle it with mustard seeds. It's also like visually beautiful, like
yeah,
Indian
food
vegetarian
is very,
food.
Yeah.
And they had this like eggplant curry and
was
like,
it Bharta?
I don't know what it was called actually.
Hey,
yeah,
I love Indian food.
Yeah, because I just started trying to eat less meat, and so you're trying to not go to like the regular veg places,
right?
Like, you
right.
Because I'm Haitian and I like spicy food. I like flavor.
Yeah.
So Indian vegetarian food has opened up a whole new world
right.
of like amazing food, and you don't even think about the fact that you're not eating meat. So it's underrated as fuck to me.
Right.
Are there
right.
Haitian restaurants like around?
Not in Los Angeles. There was one called T. George's, and you know. People listening can tell me if I'm wrong.
Yeah,
I did
I'm sure they will.
I did the research. I was trying to find like Haitian restaurants out here, at least in LA proper. And T. George's recently closed, I think like last year or 2 years ago. And that was the only Haitian restaurant. And I have just not found.
I think the way to find is there's probably somebody who has a catering business, which is usually how
T.
those.
T. George's was a catering business.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't
know. We might have to go to some like black churches because you'd be like, hey, where's the Haitian dude?
I tried to find a Haitian church too because that's where you know Haitians are and they know where the food is. And I couldn't find a Haitian church out here either. So I don't know where the Haitians are.
What's
in
a great
LA.
Haitian dish? Like, what's your
Guilla
favorite?
Guilla is the. You know, if you go to Haiti, you got to have guilla. Uh-huh. You know, it's deep fried pork, and you usually have it with plantains called banan pese, which are just like, you know, flat deep fried plantains.
Oh, like tostones.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And then you'll usually have it with like some pickled peppers that like Haitians make. Like they like cut up like carrots and peppers and all kinds of things, and they just like put it in vinegar and like with it. So it's like this pickled...
escabeche,
it's like
or whatever
pickled
they call
coleslaw, basically.
Got you.
That sounds
super
delicious.
Spicy. It's so delicious. That's like the street food. Like everybody has to have it.
That sounds wonderful.
This makes me want to go to the Haitian
I
restaurant.
I know. Seriously, I'm getting so hungry.
Lunch.
All right.
We should not record this around lunchtime because
right.
I'm just going to be like, fuck
so
the news of the day. Tell me more about Haitian food.
Yeah, tell
right?
me more about.
Let's just describe Haitian food.
Can you tell me more about President Fried Pork? I'm like, wait.
Oh, what, that would be a good president.
President Fried Pork? I love him. Love his agenda.
So much better than this current president.
Charlotte, what is something that is overrated?
Weed.
Ooh. An alternate point of view from our 420 episode.
Oh, yeah. I think it's...
I almost spit out my cold brew just now. Yeah. Now, go on.
You know, I haven't been smoking weed that long. Maybe 5 years, probably, which is not very long, I think.
Right.
I'm in my 30s. and I'm getting less and less enamored with it.
Like, yeah, okay.
And I think the proliferation of weed is adding to that exhaustion with it. Like,
right.
I'm just using it as a cure-all, an everyday use kind of thing for whatever. I'm kind of getting over it, so.
Oh, like before, just like, man, I'm stressed. Like, let me smoke. Let me relax
a
little
or
bit.
Or I have cramps. Let me smoke. Or I got writer's block. Let me smoke. Or I need to sleep. Let me smoke.
Right.
I need to, you know what I mean? Literally anything I needed, I would smoke. And now I'm like.
I can see how that relationship can wear out eventually. Because if it's like the means to an end, then like versus me, I don't know where I stand. You know what I mean? I can't think. No, but I can see how, especially too, like, as I see the, like, stores expand and brands can like advertising more aggressively, it's weird to sort of like be in this weird sort of quasi-prohibition era where there's also like massive marketing pushes for weed. Right.
There's, and I saw an article in The Guardian. I didn't even read it, but the headline was like, weed made me a better mom. And I was like, get the fuck out of here.
Like, we don't need pieces like that.
Yeah. Right. Yes.
That's you writing
immediately
to...
over it.
Right. Yeah, the writer of that was communicating directly to an in-law who was critical of the weed smokers.
Right.
Marijuana culture has always had its side that was like obnoxious and annoying to be around. Like the white dudes with dreadlocks who are gonna, you know, tell you that marijuana can fix everything and like have all these conspiracies and shit like that. And I'm sure the mainstreaming of it is not going to fix that. That is just gonna make that even more, you know, present in the mainstream culture. And you're gonna be seeing things on Goop about how sick marijuana is.
Right. I've also had a lot of like emotional reactions to weed as far as like it making me extra anxious or extra depressed, or you know, like I've really had to watch when I smoke, because if I'm in the least bit emotionally triggered, it can really fuck up my weed.
That's I went either way back when I smoked, and but our guest on Friday's 420 episode, Josh Androsky, was saying that for his underrated, it was getting too high, because you like learn things about yourself, like you learn what your biggest insecurities are and have to confront them. That was always my thing, is like I would always feel much better after I would have a horrible experience, but I would have those experiences where I was like, God, I'm the worst.
I'm like, damn, have my parents thought about their retirement plan?
Exactly.
I'm high and seeing one commercial come up, I'm like, oh my God, what about them? What about their future?
You can get that with shrooms and you don't need...
You know, I think it's all versions of like, if it is meant to sort of inspire some deep self-reflection and introspection, then like it can work in that sense. But also, like I think some people, like I have friends who are just wired in a way that they react to smoking weed in a way that just exacerbates sort of certain ways of thinking.
And even for the self-reflection thing, it's like you can't do that every day. You don't want to deep dive every single day into your own brain. There's, it's real dark in there.
Yeah.
I like to. I don't know.
I can't.
Charlotte, what is... a myth? What is something that people think is true that you know to be not
true? That breakfast is the most important meal of the day.
Thank you.
I like it.
Been intermittent fasting for the past year, and I skip breakfast every day.
Were you a staunch observer of the breakfast?
I was a freaking religious
breakfast eater.
I was a religious breakfast eater. Like, wow. I couldn't, I could skip another meal, but breakfast wouldn't be it. Especially because I love breakfast food in particular.
Yeah.
I went to Emmanuel College in Boston, and we had like an annual event where we would serve breakfast at midnight, and like, you know, I'd be the first person there.
That's
like,
some stoner shit.
Some stoner shit.
And
dude,
you only
was, like,
smoking
a
weed for 5 years?
School. It was a super Catholic school. Right, it was like not about drugs, even though it totally should have been.
Right. Well, I went to Catholic high school, and it was all about drugs.
But I was just overeating. I was overeating, and I didn't need breakfast. And it was usually sugary. It was usually a muffin. It was usually pancakes some shit that you don't need, right?
Yeah,
of course. That's why
it's terrible
for you. It's delicious.
And
or cereal.
The whole idea that it is the most important meal of the day comes from like a marketing push by like the bacon and egg industry.
Right.
Like, it honestly is that cynical.
Really, for one, embrace our chicken embryo overlords and swine. But
the dairy lobby, you guys, just... know that the dairy lobby is like killing lots and lots of people indirectly.
Sure, right. Yeah. Especially when you look at like those images of like part of a balanced breakfast, and it was like a big ass glass of milk, a big ass glass of orange juice, like a whole plate of eggs, and you're like, I'm eating all this.
There's been one time in American history when our rate of death from heart disease has like gone down. Otherwise, it's just been going up and up and up. And the only time it went down was during World War II when there was milk rations and you couldn't drink as much milk or use as much milk as you normally would. Because that it's really bad for
it's
you.
It's really bad for you.
Yeah.
I have lost weight, and another thing you guys can learn about me personally is my digestion has been superb.
Oh, good. Okay.
Since skipping breakfast.
Just no breakfast.
I always try to be a breakfast person because I used to think like, oh, it's good for your metabolism too.
Yeah,
like
if jump you're starts eating, your metabolism.
Yeah, even if you're not eating like just bullshit, but just mm-hmm. to kind of put stuff in your body to get the metabolism going. But I just have trouble like since I was a kid of being hungry in the morning.
Yeah.
But I love breakfast. I was just always eating breakfast like at one.
You had a problem of not being hungry?
Yeah, like I'd wake up and I was never like, man, I need to eat. I would just be like,
I'm
ready to go.
This is the thing, like you don't realize that your body is trained to be hungry at that time when you eat breakfast every morning. Because when I stopped eating breakfast every morning, I'm really not hungry until
around. Your body adapts.
Yeah, your body really does adapt. And you get a sense of how hungry you actually are. Like I was never hungry because I was eating three meals a day. I was definitely eating way too much.
Right.
That was number one, yeah.
The new hot shit is like having a 4-hour feeding window where like you just eat during those 4 hours or something. If he, telling us about like
how he comes in a panic. He's like, hold on, man, I got to eat these three chicken breasts. Like, or I'll be like, oh, you were eating on that podcast. He's like, my feeding window.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's why I just skip breakfast because like when you start learning about intermittent fasting, you learn all this crazy shit to do. I was just like, this is unsustainable.
Yeah, like,
I'm
not
going to do that every day. I'll just skip breakfast. That's easy.
Yeah. And speaking of breakfast, guys, let's get into the stories of the day.
Yes.
Waffle House.
Oh,
I shouldn't have said it in such a joyous way. But Waffle House.
you really had to just go.
Waffle House. Let's bring it down here. No, there was a mass shooting there in Nashville. Waffle House. The perp has a long history of making threats. He was naked, but for a trench coat. Very, very strange story. But yeah, four people were killed, and he was wrestled to the ground by like a real life John McClane action hero.
Yeah, like as it was happening, you know, they're asking him like, you know, what were you thinking? And he just said, "I'm going to have to try to find some kind of flaw or a point in time where I could make it work for myself." And by making it work for himself, he bum rushed this dude and tackled him on the ground and got the gun away from him.
Right.
And then the dude eventually escaped. And as of just recording, we found out that he was apprehended. It's interesting to see. You know, there was a real hero there. And this guy was also another person who had a very clear record of having problems with his mental state. And he had his guns taken away, but then they were given back to his father, who then just gave them back to him. And when you look at sort of his, like, he was a known entity to law enforcement for like saying stuff like Taylor Swift was actually stalking him and shit like that.
Which, I mean, we don't know whether to believe that or not, right? Like, no.
If Taylor Swift, I mean, I don't know. We don't know. But do you remember, last year there was a guy who bum rushed the White House lawn and tried to get into the White House and was like,
that.
I'm a sovereign citizen. That's this guy.
Right.
So it's just, again, we need to be doing more about our gun control because clearly this is another person who clearly should not have been anywhere near any kind of weapons.
And obviously gun rights people are going to say, well, he like broke the law, but our laws need to be more strictly enforced and need to work around the fact that they're like anybody can get a gun at any time, given the current just flood of guns in the United States. So. Yeah, we need to work around that because there are a lot of mentally ill people out there and there are a lot of guns out there. And when those two ingredients are put together, we're going to have shit like this until we start getting guns off the street, I think.
Yeah. It's just weird how fucking normal this shit is now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, even when I saw the headline, I really thought, oh, only four people were killed.
Right.
And that's fucking terrible place to be in mentally where that's like the calculus in my mind of like, oh, is there like a number that is makes it a tragedy in my mind? Or like that's how I've had to compartmentalize? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm sure it would have been more if not for this fucking dude who like just had the insane like instinct for self-preservation, but just instinct to, you know, go do the thing that I think 99.9% of the population would not have the guts to do and like tackle. And, you know, he said he was only looking out for himself, but I'm sure he saved a lot of people's lives.
100% of Republicans that are for guns would never do that stuff.
Right.
They would never, ever, ever.
And I don't even think if they had a gun on them, they would actually shoot another
they
person.
They wouldn't.
Because this is the other thing, what we were talking about earlier, is like, I don't think, at least the gun owners I know, they don't own guns because they have a fantasy about using them on other people. Like, gun owners I know are people who like target shooting or just like are part of like a culture of like, you know, their parents were veterans and things like that, or in law enforcement, so they just grew up around guns or whatever. But they don't – this idea of a person who's, like, always packing a pistol or whatever and is just ready to enforce the law on somebody – you know, I think you have to really look at our fabric as people. Like, we're not built to be doing shit like that.
Yeah, because it's batshit crazy. I wish I heard more from sane gun owners like this, because the whole conversation is so black and white. It's
right.
Like either guns go away or you have crazy people screaming that,
or like, I would have killed
them. Don't take away my guns, and
right,
I
yeah
would have killed them. And it's just like, it'd be great to hear from sane, regular people who like use guns.
Well, I think
recreationally,
we're seeing, right, and I thought,
and think that there should be a lot of laws,
yeah,
you know, regulating it. But I don't hear from those.
Well,
people.
We did for a second right after Parkland, right? There were a lot of people who were not a lot, but there was this. There was like this sort of. It was like fashionable for people to be like, "I was in the military. This is my AR. I'm breaking it because like citizens
yeah
shouldn't have it." And there was that kind of thing. But yeah, I feel like there could be a lot to this debate when you actually have like common sense people or like
right
or even gun owners who aren't seen as immediately being these
right
sort of like doomsday prepper
yeah
type people.
It's really a shame that the NRA has chosen the direction they've chosen, because the NRA is, when you buy a gun, they are, you go to a training course immediately that is sponsored by the NRA.
Right.
They are pro responsible gun ownership. It's just that their public persona, their public brand has become this like crazy
vigilante,
like fucking
thing,
vigilante
yeah
justice thing. And yeah, I mean, there are two camps. There are the sane gun owners who, you know, buy a gun or two,
right,
and, you know, keep it in a safe or, you know, take it to target practice. But then there is this gun culture. Like, if you look at gun magazines, there are all these stories, there are ads written to be like, you know, protect your family
right,
with
right
this like mm-hmm automatic or like semi-automatic
yeah
assault rifle. And, you know, those are the people that the gun industry is focused on, because those are the people who buy 50 fucking guns.
Right,
yeah,
and are going to be the most sort of energetic when
right
defending the right to own a weapon.
Right,
right.
Yeah, I guess it really is two camps. It's those people who, yeah, they're responsible, and other people who are really operating in this bizarre fantasy world where they have to protect themselves from the evil.
I think we need to put pressure.
It's not even a bizarre world. It's like very much a world that's been like cultivated by this like xenophobic racist.
For sure, yeah, you're right.
Like, they're coming to get me.
Yeah, these thugs
they're
are going to invade your home.
White women.
Right.
It's just like, just, you know, I would love for us to just talk more openly about, like, just call a thing a thing. It's
right,
just like
right
you guys have been brainwashed with racist and xenophobic ideas about
right by your local
get
news.
By yeah, and you've
everything
never been outside
Fox
of
news
wherever you're from.
Right, right, exactly.
Like, you've never met that kind of person.
Right,
you're
right,
scared
exactly
of them and want to shoot them. So it's, anyway.
I think people, let's put pressure on responsible gun owners to kind of have more of a
voice,
more of a voice.
Yeah.
Like, find your
stand
own NRA.
Up.
Right, because
like,
they're
have, like,
yeah,
sane NRA, SNRA.
Right.
I want to see somebody
I've had
put
people
that shit together.
Message me on Twitter and Instagram talking about their gun, like, especially around the Parkland time when we
yeah
were talking about it, saying, like, I'm a responsible gun owner. I don't think people need, like, this and that.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, it's important that we can still talk about gun ownership in a way that is divorced from this idea that it's either taking all your guns
yeah
or every guns for everybody.
There is a middle ground.
Yeah,
the smartest person I've ever talked to about gun ownership is this guy Jason Pargin, who writes at Cracked as David Wong, and he's a gun owner, but he has this inside look at the gun industry because like he grew up around gun magazines, and so
right
he knows like how crazy that part of it is. But you know, he's also a responsible gun owner. So yeah, I think those are the people to sort of help us reel this fucking crazy conversation
well, right
in a little
yeah
bit.
Yeah, because I think on the right, many people view people on the left as every liberal person wants to take away all of your guns. And then there are people on the left who think everyone on the right in regards to guns are just crazy gun-obsessed people who just want to keep guns everywhere out in the open.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people need to understand that it's much more nuanced. I feel like, yeah, the discussion is really so black or white. It's a little
right
crazy.
And to me, it, like, the saddest part is, like, whenever I read about it, it looks like it just comes down to sales. It just
yes
comes down to,
right,
like, if the conversation isn't black and white, then it hurts our sales.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, if we have any kind of sanity going into this, then
Yeah.
You know, our shareholders don't.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't make money.
Because it's an industry
like,
where not people are.
Right.
It's not like a refrigerator where every home needs one, but they want you to think that every home is incomplete without
like,
a weapon.
Like, if that is what needs to get hurt, then that thing needs to get hurt real bad. Yeah. Like, those sales need
to. Well, and that's why you're seeing a lot of manufacturers, like, I feel like it was Remington or Mossberg recently. They had to file for bankruptcy. I think it was Remington. Yeah. Because, like, sales are declining and. Because I think most people are kind of catching
on. Not everyone needs a gun.
Right.
But sales aren't declining to the point that, I don't know, the industry still did really well during the Obama presidency and I think maybe got a little greedy and maybe overexpanded, and that's why Remington fell down. But yeah, David Hogue, the kid from Parkland, has been talking about, you know, these financial industries like Vanguard and different big banks have a lot of their money in the gun industry. And, you know, if you have your money with them, you know,
divest.
Yeah, divest or let them know like you don't want any of your money in the gun industry and, you know, get it away from those funds that are helping to support this shit. All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. And we're back. Hey, fun Waffle House fact to transition from the last thing. So apparently Waffle Houses are the thing that FEMA uses to determine how bad a hurricane is, because Waffle Houses are like the most resilient business in the world. Like, you can't shut them down. They won't shut down unless like the tornado directly hits them.
The eye of the storm is overhead.
Right. So basically ahead and after a hurricane, they're like, okay, what's the Waffle House index? And it's just like, are they up and running? Are they at half, you know, productivity where like they can only offer like a few things on the menu?
Right.
Or are
they
totally shut down? And that's one of the main indicators they use to determine like how well a location is doing.
Who's contributing to this index? Is there like some dude who's like, all right, man, I hit 14 Waffle Houses today. Let me tell you, my car was destroyed by debris.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, is the Waffle House, like, I guess, is there some kind of database?
Cooperating, And it's probably good marketing for them to just be like, we're fucking always open, you know? So, like, we'll work with FEMA to let them know what our index is.
That is fucking crazy.
Yeah, that
kinda
is.
Kind of cool.
It is. All right. Let's move on to...
Also, hold on. I just thought it was like a shitty employee. It's like the worst place you'd want to work.
Right.
Because they're like, bruh. They're like, you got work off? I fucking still have to go in. Because these motherfuckers never shut down.
Right.
Take the boat. I just had to put myself in the shoes of someone working there.
I got in a hurricane.
Yeah, exactly. You take the canoe in during Hurricane Harvey.
You're like, you know, I take the bus, right? The bus isn't even running. They're like, I'm sorry, your shift is a shift. It's Waffle House, baby. You know what we do.
Have you guys eaten at Waffle House?
I have.
Waffle House has some delicious shit.
Of course.
They have, country gravy on everything.
Oof. All right, let's talk about the upcoming midterms, Miles.
Yeah,
let's
talk about that.
Your headline in our doc is, fuck Mueller, focus on the fucking midterms.
That's right, because, again, everybody, all the liberals were dancing in the streets being like, oh, man, Cohen's going, he's going to flip. Mueller's gonna, you know, I get it. Look, this fucking presidency is a nightmare, and we're trying to look at any way to get out of it to end this thing. But I think people need to be really realistic, right? I think the most important thing is that we have an effective check on the executive branch, because right now, with the Republicans controlling all the chambers, that means people can, like in the House and in the Senate, can use their power to just simply obstruct or keep the Democrats from properly investigating or getting answers to things, or just generally holding the president or his cabinet members accountable.
Mm-hmm.
So let's paint a picture that is an actual nightmare for Trump. It's 2019, okay? And they are swearing in the whole new batch of Democrats that have basically given the Democrats control of the House. Nancy Pelosi maybe gets her gavel back if Nancy Pelosi does in fact become the speaker again. And now we have 21 subpoena-wielding House committee chairmen waiting to just, it's full-on investigation season. So, okay, so there are 21 committees in the House where their chairmen actually have subpoena power.
Okay.
So they can, you know, some of them, there's a committee vote or a consultation with a ranking minority member, but none of them actually give the minority, like, any veto power. As we saw in the House's investigation, quote-unquote, into Russia, where Adam Schiff was powerless as the ranking minority member. All he could do is be like, Devin Nunes is fucking around. Yeah. And he had nothing. He could do nothing except to just be like, they're fucking around.
So these 21 different committees are always led by whoever has the most.
Whoever's
House
the
members.
Majority party.
Okay.
That means the whatever the ranking member is, you suddenly become the chairperson or you become the ranking minority member.
Okay,
so based on the power. How it's distributed. Now, the crazy thing is when you're checking the executive branch, it can be one chamber. Like the Senate can do that on their own. The House can do that on their own. It's not like legislation where both houses have to agree on the legislation and then, you know, has that its own process. When it comes to accountability and things like that, any one chamber can do that on their own. They don't need the other chamber to do that. So that's very interesting because right now, as we've seen, is that basically the GOP has used their power to just gum up any investigations, or they use their subpoena power to get fucking just to obstruct Mueller's investigation or just protect the president. But we're starting to see that using their majority as like a human shield is not really the best practice because there are many people who are getting off the fucking ship very quickly, as you can see with the number of retirements. They don't like what's written in the sand.
So on the retirements, a question I've had is this just an unprecedented number of retirements, or are all of these people coming to a point in their career when, you know, they might normally retire and it's like an either or thing? Or
I think like a very diplomatic reading of it would be there will always be people retiring. Mm-hmm. There will always be people switching offices or looking to get other positions. So that always happens. There's always a set number. I think we're above 44 now, which is actually not normal. It's the number of it, which kind of transcends the sort of normal turnover when it comes to the Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're seeing a lot of people just being like, giving weird examples. Like other people be like, I'm actually going to go into the private sector to do this or whatever.
To make money and exploit.
Like John Boehner did. It's like, look, let me get out a little bit and then I'm going to get all the GOP to come around on medical marijuana or whatever.
Right.
Anyway, so you look at like Jason Chaffetz, he was like, I want to be with my family. Or like Paul Ryan was like, I want to be with my family. Which I get.
We all want to be with our family.
But everyone wants to be with their family. But, you know, prior to Trump, you seemed to have no problem being a, like.
You were, get my family the fuck away from me.
Yeah, you're like, dude, I'm chilling in my condo in D.C., man. Yeah. You know, like, whatever. So we're seeing people kind of looking at it of being kind of in the GOP in this administration as sort of an untenable situation. For some people, now the people will spin their reasons for doing it. But it's clear to see that some people would rather just retire than even try and put up a fight for their seat.
I'm not letting any of these things that I'm seeing give me any kind of hope in the Democratic Party. I'm still very much waiting to see what they do. Even if they do get control of the House, let's see how they use it. Because I just don't.
Right. So here's it.
Totally.
Because I think already the Democrats as a party, the platform is fucking whack.
It's like fucking whack.
It's not resonating with anybody except for the old people over in D.C. who think it's effective.
There was a front page article in the New York Times yesterday about how the Democratic Party is actually like trying to get people to drop out of the races so they don't like split the Democratic vote essentially. And they're always choosing like the centrist,
the establishment person.
The person who used to be a Republican and now is
they
a Democrat because that like gets them physically aroused. Like the idea of like somebody who can appeal to both sides.
Oh, or a veteran.
Right.
Woo!
And so they're like get the people who they're encouraging to drop out are like, you know, outsiders
who are like, I was a social worker.
Right.
And now
or women who like aren't like establishment people. And that's bullshit because
bullshit.
As we saw in 2016, like we want outsiders. That's what people want right now.
But this is exactly why I don't trust them.
Right.
Because
they
day by day don't show that they've learned from 2016 at all.
That most people in the base want to go away.
We
want to
go
left.
Away. You know who surprised the shit out of me? Cynthia Nixon. She did this. She did this video about legalizing marijuana and like called out how racist marijuana has been in the past or whatever, arresting black people for it while it's been legal for white people for a long time.
Right.
And she literally said that, and I was just like, you might make me want to vote for a celebrity.
Right,
like,
right.
Yeah. I never wanted.
I got
to vote
nervous
for
a second. I was like,
wait, like
you literally said
right.
It's disproportionately affecting people
exactly.
of color.
Exactly. I was just
fuck?
Like, whoa, she's really coming out swinging, and I was just like, that's what you have to do to grab our attention,
especially people of color, because
especially
with white candidates, they like to dance around shit like that. Yeah. They'll never full throw to be like, hey, man, the criminal justice system is completely fucking up an entire section of our population.
If we learn anything from the Trump presidency, it's that the majority of the country is not okay with honesty. Like, we are not okay as a country saying that the president is racist, saying that the GOP is racist, or just talking about things as they actually are.
Right,
like,
right.
We're not okay with reality. And the way that the Democratic Party, seeing clearly that there is, like, this crop of black women, you know, I'm a black woman, so obviously I'm going to talk about stuff.
Because
this is what I feel like is just, like, looking at how the Democratic Party doesn't support and uplift black female candidates, even though these people have been on the ground.
And delivering, and, like, election after election.
After election for you, building your campaigns, volunteering for you, doing all of the grunt work, and yet we're never elevated. Even though I think that black women could possibly save the party.
Oh.
When you have someone like Michelle Obama in the wings, who literally helped Barack Obama become president,
well,
and you're
looked,
not using this insane resource that you have.
Well, there's a record amount of women and women of color running for office this cycle.
It gives me chills.
Yeah, it's
crazy.
Because now I think people are actually, what's great is to see people be empowered and go, you know what, fuck this, I can actually do something. I don't give a fuck about what the traditional knowledge was around this. I know what I'm capable of. I see the energy. And I will now apply that to running a campaign.
But meanwhile, the DNCC's test for whether you are a viable candidate, they take your phone, they go through the list, and they're like, okay, how much could you get this person to donate?
Yeah.
How much could you get that person to donate? Are they like a fundraiser? Are they, like, basically, how well connected are you to rich people?
Right.
Yeah. Essentially.
Yeah, because they're like, look, we can't have any broke people. Yeah.
Right.
You can be woke, but don't be broke.
But isn't that their job?
Like, yeah,
aren't they
exactly.
the ones that are supposed to be connecting them and helping
them
fundraise?
Yeah,
and
you're already
seeing. Do you want to do your job?
You know, there are plenty of candidates who are raising with small donations or away from using super PACs. I mean, Kamala Harris just, I think, over the weekend was like, I'm not taking PAC money anymore. Because someone's running in 2020. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there are plenty of people. Like, I know Elizabeth Warren raised a huge ton of money off small donations. There are a lot of people who are able to raise off small donor money. Because, yes, the reality is in politics, people, when they look at a candidate, they're like, well, is this guy funded? Because if they're not, then the DNC has to go, well, great, now we're going to have to fucking pitch in or whatever because they don't have their own hookups. But if we can get a lot of these candidates to not rely on the traditional forms of fundraising or their traditional donors or benefactors, then we can start to empower actual candidates that are more, you know, that they reflect the values that I think people want to see. And so I would tell you, if you see a potential candidate that embody the values that resonate with you as a voter, I would recommend giving them money because the money does add up and you can get them off of this idea of having to be beholden to a lot of these huge donors and then protect their interests once they get into office, because let's be real, that's sort of the game.
Right. At the same time, if somebody who's not establishment gets the ability to, like, raise money from a super PAC or something and they're having to compete with, like, the Koch brothers, take that shit.
Sure, sure. But again, all that money comes with strings attached. You know what I mean? There are expectations
Know,
once you kiss the ring.
George Soros.
Oh, fuck.
We know what's going on.
Yeah.
I think what they're doing is, so they see they have this blue wave, as people are describing it, or a blue tsunami, like, depending on how excited
I'm Japanese. I prefer wave.
Okay. How excited and motivated voters are totally determines how, you know, how many seats the Democrats take. And they're just taking it for granted that their base is going to come out in record number because they're mad at Trump. But they should not be taking it for granted, because if you have some candidate who is just another inauthentic person who 100%. Is just playing politics, and that's not going to do it. That's not going to get people out. And the Republicans are going to the base.
They are. And again, the Hillary campaign took us for granted.
Yes.
She assumed that we would vote for her despite all the shit show that was going on in the DNC and those emails about, you know, trying to undermine Bernie's campaign. And it was just like, we don't like that shit either.
Right,
so it's
just
like, you guys continuing to take things for granted, our vote, our voice, or whatever it is. And I'm just like, there's clearly no learning. There's been no learning.
Right. Well,
which is the problem with the DNC, with the Democratic Party to me in general, is that they don't learn from mistakes.
Yeah. So, well, the left in general is like a Thanksgiving dinner where everybody wants to say the polite thing about something and nobody's drunk enough to just start truth speaking at the table.
Right.
And right now, once we saw a little bit of truth speaking work, people were like, oh shit.
Yeah.
What they have to realize now is that is actually a very sexy, there's a lot of appeal to say, yo, the country is fucked up.
It's fucked up.
We have real fucking solutions. We're not just going to say, hey, man, we're going to get you back to work. No, talk about income inequality. Talk about, like, how hard it is to own a home as a person of color. Talk about
how hard it is to go to college in this country.
Right.
Talk about how like, unequal education is in this country. Even if you do go to a public school, are you going to go to a good one or are you going to go to a shitty one? Talk about the fact that there's no water in an American city. There's clean water.
Or
what
no power in
on?
A commonwealth in Puerto Rico. Yeah,
right. Like, talk about how there's people coming up into Waffle Houses and schools and little kids and shooting it up in movie theaters and like, this is batshit crazy.
Yeah. Don't like paper over the cracks and be
don't
like, no.
Don't paper over it.
Let me talk about, let's hold Wall Street accountable.
Right.
Like, no, we're past that.
You guys didn't hold Wall Street accountable anyway.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure Hillary mentioned all those talking points, but then she also met with all these Wall Street people and was taking money from them and you knew she wasn't going to do shit about it. You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, she never said anything that resonated with people of color like once on that campaign trail. Like, not
that campaign was what reminded me that Hillary was white. I was just like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. like aside from a couple like boilerplate sort of like talking points, I was never like, whoa, she's really talking that shit.
Yeah.
Right.
And again, that's because I think she took for granted that in general, it just seemed like an easy choice. Like, look, you can vote for me or you can vote for this fucking shitbag.
She took for
over
granted
here.
That Bill was the black people's president ever since he played sax on Arsenio Hall. And like, and he ain't anymore.
and I think
you're not the black
and I
people's
think,
president.
And I think their cat had a video game on Genesis, Sox the Cat. Or at least he had a comic book.
So,
wow,
I mean, that was cool.
What a time.
How did she lose you after that?
I don't know. I mean, back to what I was saying, though, about the midterm. So, right. So if the Democrats do take control, right, think about all these committees that have the subpoena power and how they can deliver all these congressional colonoscopies to the administration.
Right.
For example, the Ways and Means Committee, and this is from an article on Slate. They're talking about all the possible investigations that could happen with Democrats in power. The Ways and Means Committee, they can sharpen the national discussion around tax fairness and subpoenaing the president's tax returns. Okay, what about the Financial Services Committee? That would be chaired by Maxine Waters. I have a feeling if she was the fucking chairwoman, she would subpoena the shit out of.
God.
So for what's in their purview in the financial services, they have the authority to look at like sort of the phenomenon of, you know, foreign oligarchs laundering their ill-gotten gains through purchases of luxury condominiums like the ones that are in Trump-owned buildings in New York or that weird building in Miami that he sold for like a 300% profit inexplicably. And you look at even just sort of like the Armed Services Committee, they can convene like proceedings to fucking talk about why it's bad to share state secrets with people who don't have security clearances. Like basic things that Republicans want to act like, oh, well, it's not an issue. You know, there is the ability to actually be like, hold on, you need to come in here and explain what the fuck is going on.
Right. Expose the wildly corrupt shit that is happening.
Right. Like, in front of
the swamp.
Nobody likes corruption. It's going to be hard to argue with, although Trump supporters, I'm sure, will find a way. But yeah, if Democrats are a sober Thanksgiving, Republicans have become like Irish St. Paddy's Day. Like everybody's just fucking wasted and saying the first thing that comes to mind because they are just going to the base hard.
Yeah.
Like they're all of these House elections, they're wearing MAGA hats. They're basically talking about how like Trump is their savior of America.
Oh, you mean
democracy.
Like this new crop of candidates for the midterms?
Yeah, exactly. They're like, lock her up. In their campaign ads.
Yo,
which
she's
is insane.
You're not running against Hillary
you're not
Clinton
running
and you're
against
saying
Hillary
lock
Clinton.
Her up still.
What the guy who said that has actually been to jail for killing 29 people by violating safety standards in the mine that he.
Oh, and his coal. Oh, yeah, Don Blankenship.
Don Blankenship. And his talking point is we don't need to investigate our president. We need to arrest Hillary.
That doesn't even make sense.
So, yeah, they're just going back to the 2016 election and basically. The thing that they have going for them is, you know, the Democratic Party kind of went away from their authentic groundswell of support and the Republicans went with it and they're realizing, okay, go to this horrible toxic wave of, you know, aggression that has been bubbling up.
What a weird, I mean, I guess we'll see if this two-year-old campaigning style will still hold up. I mean, it clearly didn't work for the countless Republicans that try to brand themselves as like Trump clones in the special elections in the last 8 months. So that's one thing to somewhat rest easy about. But yeah, it feels like they're like, well, fuck it, man. Just play the greatest hits.
Right.
You know, maybe they'll keep dancing.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm not going to play these ads for you, but there's just crazy shit where like the guy's spouting off about like, a guy running for the Senate in Missouri is talking about like how Trump is the savior of our country. He has also said that feminists have snake-filled heads, and he hopes his daughters don't become she-devils. So this is where we're at.
Anna Hosnier, you have a shirt that says feminist on. Now,
yeah, super producer Anna Hosnier.
How many snakes you got in your head? Uh-oh. You said it. Yep, your seven tongues said it all. What the fuck kind of thing is that? Snake head?
Snakes, like, in their head.
These guys don't get laid. I don't know what it is about Republicans and their fear of women and like pussy.
Right.
And like they just, it's like a force field they don't understand or something. Like,
right.
Just the way they talk about women is bananas.
Clearly, that's to be like evoke, you know, the fucking
devil
garden, and that's
like,
the yeah, exactly, the
yeah,
beast or whatever.
It's very
so
evocative.
What, like, let's play out in their mind if feminists took control of the country. What does that mean? Everyone's penis will have to be turned into a vagina, and then men are like thrown off the like. I don't, you know what I mean? Because like it was easy with gay marriage. They say shit like, "Well, what's next? A man's gonna marry a horse and a blah blah blah." Like,
right.
What
it's
is there?
It's hard to like.
What's that
like
fantasy?
There
look
is
like?
No argument, right? Because this is just a person that's dumb, or like I don't even want to call them dumb, but someone who doesn't have like a real actual point of view,
sound opinions, yeah.
Right? And then I'm supposed to argue about the legitimacy of women.
Right, right.
Like,
exactly.
What am I arguing?
If I'm that candidate, I'm debating.
Right.
I'm like, people of Missouri, it's clear to see. My opponent, I mean, look at all the fucking snakes in her head.
I mean, and I literally have like
braids,
braids yeah, in my hair right now.
You're
so
like, that's my
like,
hairstyle?
Yeah.
Well,
thank
you. Well, you get where I'm coming from, don't you? I'm really curious what the fear is. Is that, I guess it's just that men are no longer the dominant force in society.
But
and I guess
they
that's,
are.
No, right. Exactly. Like, but isn't that, is that like the expiration date that they see coming?
It is
the
fear. It's the fear of.
Yeah. Sexual
I don't know
insecurity.
If it's their own sexual insecurity or the fear that a woman will. Because I don't think any man has a real fear that a woman will seduce him. Unless
right,
he is a basketball player or like, you know, someone someone who has actual money that people are coming
yeah,
for.
And
right,
can
you know,
use
but,
that excuse where
right,
like, hey, well, they were, I was seduced.
Exactly. And you literally were. But like the average man, I don't think has to worry about like
right,
being seduced.
But
no,
they might
men
have
fantasize about being seduced.
They might have
right,
relationships with women who are less, you know, assertive. And they might just think, well, I could never like deal with a woman who speaks her mind
right,
because that's too intimidating.
Yeah.
And so I don't know, guys. Give it a try. It's actually very rewarding to hang out with women.
Try thinking of a woman
oh, yeah,
as
yeah,
a person.
Yeah.
Number one. Imagine you were talking to another human being
yeah,
and start there.
Very
my
easy,
brain just exploded.
Holy shit.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back. And unfortunately, there is a developing story we're just seeing right now. That a van drove into a crowd in Toronto, a parent terror attack, or it looks like terror attacks that have happened before. Looks like many people are dead, but, you know, this is a developing story as we record this, so we're not going to really get into it other than to say that it's fucking
tragic,
terrible.
Yeah.
Tragic.
So, yeah, love to everybody in Toronto,
yeah,
Canada at the moment.
We are going to talk about a couple of our thought leaders in America today. Kanye is out here basically live tweeting the writing of his philosophy book.
Yeah,
and
wow.
Shania Twain, who I've always looked to for my political and generally existential philosophical thoughts, and you know, they both came out with some pretty strange takes over the weekend.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, Shania Twain had a interview come out, I think with, I want to say The Guardian, where she basically, she's like, this is what she said, and this is a quote. I would have voted for Trump because even though he was offensive, he seemed honest. Do you want straight or polite? Not that you shouldn't be able to have both if I were voting. I just don't want bullshit. I would have voted for a feeling that it was transparent, and politics has a reputation of not being that, right? So, again, Shania, I get it. You're from
girl,
Canada.
Yeah.
You don't get it.
But you work in America.
But you know,
you know,
you
America,
know what Trump means.
I
and
like
you
how
know
she ends it with right. Like
right?
You can tell it's like yeah, if you have to end something with right. Am I right, guys? Like you just,
yeah, you knew
just shut the fuck up.
You were taking
shut
a hot take. Up. You weren't really willing to say with your chest up.
Right.
So I guess, yes, the clapback on Twitter is crazy. Like I saw many people being like, I'm not going on her tour. there was someone
who apologized.
Right, right. So then after the fucking just chorus of people being like, no, you can't say that.
Nope.
She came out and said, I would like to apologize to anybody I've offended in a recent interview. Regarding the present, the question caught me off guard. As a Canadian, I regret answering this unexpected question without giving my response more context. I am passionately against discrimination of any kind. I hope it's clear from the choices I have made and the people I stand with. I do not hold any common moral beliefs with the current president. I was trying to explain in response to a question about the election that my limited understanding was that the president talked to a portion of America like an accessible person they could relate to. As he was not a politician. My answer was awkward, but certainly should not be taken as representative of my values, nor does it mean I endorse him. I make music to bring people together. My path will always be one of inclusivity, as my history shows. Mm. Now,
I think we gave too much time to her bullshit backing out of what she said statement.
But. So do you think, I don't know anything about Shania Twain. I don't know anything about her politics.
Shania, she's had two great comedy appearances in I Heart Huckabees, or just, I don't even know if she was in there, but just the... He always retells his story about Shania Twain. And it's
every
businessman, you know, who has like the one story that you've heard like five times. It's one of my favorite parts of any movie, even though that movie's a little whack. But,
you know, I hit a hole in one with Charles Barkley.
Right, exactly. And then she was in a great episode of Broad City that I was watching last night, actually. And, but I think she's actually hitting on something. So on Love It or Leave It, the Crooked Media podcast over the weekend, Aaron Ryan, who's a friend of the pod and a former Obama, I think, you know, something or other, was saying that she thinks that the like Rosetta Stone for current American politics is authenticity matters more than anything. Like feeling like this person is authentic and, you know, that they can just say what they're saying over social media and you're actually hearing from them and not a bullshit, like, sort of canned statement.
Right.
Like, that's what is determining whether people come out for somebody or not. And
I guess that's true. I mean, look at Cardi B.
Right.
Like, unapologetically herself. And I don't think that's any coincidence why she's been embraced because they're like, oh, this is not a facade.
Right. Yeah. Because the internet and social media have broken down this barrier where like people just used to be satisfied with like getting canned shit. Now people are sort of almost fetishizing the idea of like authentically getting plugged into this person's personality. And Trump exploited that like a glitch in the system. And, you know, I think she was right in her analysis of, you know, how Trump came to power. It's insane that she thinks that that would have worked on her.
Right.
It's weird to be circumspect about it and then also be like, but yeah, I would have, you know, voted for that.
Do you ever listen to Shania Twain, Charlotte?
Yes.
How did you respond to this?
Honestly, I don't
care.
I mean, I just don't believe in anyone anymore. And I also, I mean, this goes back to a conversation that I was having with a white friend. I look over.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Charlotte.
This is a conversation I was having with a white friend who was talking about how, like, their mom is very racist, but their mom is, like, a really good person, you know? And, like, anytime anyone has ever told me, like, this person in my family is racist, like, they're just a staunch, hate blacks and Jews or whatever, but they are good people. And it's like, and they always, I feel like everyone always makes a point of telling me that second part when they tell me the first part.
Right.
And I think it is impossible to try to make me believe that a racist person is also a good person.
Right.
And I think that people hide behind their innocence that's been given to them by privilege, you know, as a white person. Like, I'm a good person.
Right.
This is just something that I believe. You know what I mean? And it's like, no matter how she came about that conclusion, you know, like if it was a part of a bigger question or if she was trying to put herself in someone else's shoes, you know what I mean? Like, I think it's really hard for me to give passes to people who have never had to face the consequences of what they believe. You know what I mean? It's just like, if you are ignorant or if you are stupid, if you're not well-read, if you don't understand the history of why we are here today.
Right, or what the experience is like for certain people.
And what it means for people like me to see this president get to do whatever they want and for them to be able to embolden the people that want to see people like me gone or whatever. Like, whatever your reasoning is, I don't give a shit anymore.
Yeah.
I literally don't care and I don't want to hear it. And to me, it's just like, I've had so many faves go away right. because like it's impossible to like love a white like who said some shit like wasn't it like Helen Mirren or like somebody like during the Oscars So White like said that like they didn't I don't want to say the quote because I don't know if it's actually the person but I just had so many white faves that I just like love people that I look up to artists singers authors
right.
or whatever
just say some
that
I shit.
Say some shit that I'm just like oh you're white just like Hillary like she just reminds me because you know as a human being you connect with people not based on race I don't connect with people based on race
right.
I connect with them based on who they are as
their
a person,
humanity yeah
on their humanity and if I love an artist or if I love I used to listen to Shania Twain my whole life and now like she's just one of a group of other white people who remind me that they are white
right.
and I'm just like cool
or someone
great.
Who says like
I
oh
care.
I understand the situation
yeah.
but you don't really
but,
understand yeah
and I'm just like no you don't understand it's like and I don't give a shit anymore I'm just like over everybody
yeah it's exhausting
it's exhausting
well then so well, that brings us to our next person Kanye
Man,
to the
fucking...
and again from and to me he fucking he was done the second he showed up at Trump Tower
right
I was like whoa and even
time,
like
though.
As that tour was yeah. winding down he was like hold on let me take 20 minutes to talk about Donald Trump or whatever I was like okay so over the weekend we were getting excited because he's like yo 5 albums coming I was like I got an album me and Cuddy are doing something Teyana Taylor's got a new album coming out Pusha T's got a new album out fucking Nas I'm gonna do an album with Nas and everyone's like wow then he tweeted I love the way Candace Owens thinks. Just, I guess that's part of his philosophy book. Now, if you guys don't know who Candace Owens is, she is a very problematic woman of color who Fox News just loves because
yeah.
her takes are so spicy.
Yeah.
The melanin just shoots off her skin. It's magical. It's crazy. For example, she hates Black Lives Matter. Okay, let's be real there. She thinks, man, these NFL players, they need to get off their knees because I don't know what they're complaining about type takes. She thinks Trump is quite literally, and I quote, the savior of the free world. And she also has a great video where she talks about how Black Panther is actually a pro-Trump film.
Mm-hmm.
So just to give you an idea of who Kanye loves the way this person thinks, this is the person he's talking about. And
right.
it has basically, I mean... Now, hey, I think people on the right are like, hey, we love Kanye now.
Yeah, man. This was highlighted red all weekend on the front page of Drudge, you know, which is an indication that, like, it's a story that was the most clicked on. Kanye, quote, thought police want to suppress freedom, embraces black Trump supporter. And, yeah, this is huge for them. Racist people needed a win. They were they had a bad run there. They were repeatedly faced with... sort of irrefutable evidence that black excellence was real. Black Panther came through, broke all the records. Beyonce gave the greatest live performance ever, and Kendrick won a Pulitzer. And they were just like, fuck. Well, what the fuck do we do now? And then Kanye came through. And
said some shit like that. And then Candace Owens went on Fox to be like, yeah, and Kanye gets it, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm.
he's opening up to the fact that you know, liberals want black people to feel like they're victims. And, you know, it's time to get past that. You know, black people are so focused on the past that they don't even talk
yeah.
about their vision for the future. And it's like, I'm sorry, you need to acknowledge history to understand where the fuck we're going.
Yeah.
And it's not that...
I mean, this is just some Bill Cosby respectability
yeah.
politics.
Yeah, and
shit,
it's just
right?
fucking... It's
right.
old, it's tired bullshit.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the fuck is wrong with Kanye. But again, it's true. Like, and now Trump is probably loving it. He's like,
right.
you see that? We got the coolest one
yeah,
now
coolest
on our
one.
Team. The coolest black guy.
I'm
so,
on that Dave Chappelle racial draft... Kanye can go
right.
to the racist white people. They can,
right.
have,
yeah, I don't,
they can have him.
It was so
straight up trade.
It's trade.
Yeah, no draft. Just trade.
Who are we picking up?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Who do you guys get?
Who should we pick up?
Who's a really? I heard Lorde is like a real woke white woman. Like she knows. She speaks well.
Did she skip a performance in Israel?
Yeah.
Okay, that's right. I knew it was somebody.
Oh, yeah.
I think
Natalie Portman did too.
Natalie Portman did too.
Yeah.
I told you
Natalie
she was
Portman.
Bae.
And
I think
oh,
Lorde
you don't
is
like
bae.
So producer Anna Hosni. I was like, nah, fuck that.
well, I did a little bit of that. Jack,
who
do you think? Well, I'll draft Jack.
Jack's
thanks,
pretty cool. I drafted Jack.
You were pretty.
JT,
you were pretty clear about being
right?
like, JT can he can kick rocks, bro.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name? The big black guy that just came out for the NRA.
No, we're trying to draft a white guy.
Wait, Killer Mike.
Killer Mike.
Killer Mike can go too.
I call him
just
him
two
oh,
of them go.
But LP. Maybe take LP back.
Yeah. Well, did you see his comments after though? He was like,
after
"Yo,
Killer
they
Mike?
They freaked. They, yeah, they he's like they did a bait and switch. Although I'm like, you should
but
meet
I'm just
with
like,
the NRA.
He's so smart. Like Killer Mike is so smart.
Yeah,
like,
you
when
should've...
Bernie was running, I really was looking to him. I mean, he said a lot of things that I really respected.
Right. And then
and
he came for Joanne Reed, and she owned his ass
she
on Twitter.
She owned him so hard.
Oh, it was amazing.
It was like,
But again, you know, Kanye, you know, it's hard to, it's so hard to say goodbye to yesterday.
Nah. But I'm happy saying goodbye to Kanye.
For a second, I really thought he was reemerging it, like he found his shit, and then God
Maybe
bless it.
Maybe he's about to come out with a dope album or something. Yeah. I don't know. I'll listen
Recovery's tough because a lot of people use whatever made them break down to treat a sort of mental imbalance or like a mental disorder, and then when they come out of recovery, sometimes they're absent that thing they were using as a crutch, and they need to adapt to being
right
in reality. And like, it just seems like he's
too
smart on some crazy shit.
He's
right
something's wrong because is the man who literally said Bush doesn't like black people.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean? And then
that's back when Kanye was black. Now he's something else.
Like,
and I don't know
what's funny too, because remember, wasn't he tweeting? He's like, "Yeah, I've been sampling beats from the sunken place," and I'm like, Yeah. I think motherfucker. I can tell you're tweeting from the fucking sunken place.
There.
Were you identifying with the family in that movie?
Yeah,
Kanye?
Right.
Like what the fuck?
He's like, my teacup game with spoon is strong
almost
as fuck.
Got him. shit. Yeah. Also, being extremely famous is a form of like I believe
insanity.
It's like being insane.
It
like,
has
you just,
to be, right?
Yeah. You're living in a world that is not real.
It's not
for
real.
Yeah.
100%. And also like back in the day when I used to kick around celebrities, a lot of these people, they just don't feel that they can ever meet somebody who's just trying to be their actual friend. Like they at a certain point, every person you meet, you look at through the lens of, how's this person trying to snake me? How's this person trying to get something from me? It's weird that that's sort of our privilege of not being so famous is that you can go into interaction and not immediately go, now this person's up to some fucking weird shit.
Yeah.
Although, you know,
I always assume that about
I mean, now that the Daily Zeitgeist is, you know,
right,
blowing up, you know, I'm rude as fuck to the dude at Popeyes.
No, but being a celebrity looks absolutely unappealing.
Oh, it looks terrible. Terrible. Because also, too, like, I would think about, like, you just going somewhere looking sloppy as shit, just trying to eat, and someone be like, yo, it's blah, blah, blah over there. I'm like, oh, fuck.
Some play on your name and, like, having a belly or some shit.
Right.
Like,
exactly.
Look at...
Come on, think of something.
Fatty, Fat O'Brien.
Fat. Damn, yeah. Oh, self-owned.
Yeah.
Whack O'Brien.
Yeah, I don't know. Charlotte, it's been a pleasure. Other than that last part where I was shitting on myself, it's been a pleasure having
Quite
you.
Literally.
Always a pleasure, guys. You guys are the best.
Where can people find you?
The next Velvet is at Copper Still in Koreatown, May 4th, 9 p.m.
Okay.
That is
Free
a comedy show. That in the Los Angeles area.
That I host.
Yeah.
Velvet Comedy.
Yeah, for the LA Zeit Gang. I know we have listeners out here. I just feel like I don't see you out there. Come up to me. You know, let me know you're out here. I feel like what? People
Leave
New York,
me alone.
New York and LA are rocking pretty hard with the Zeitgeist.
Yeah. For sure. All right. And are you on social media?
I am. Sharla Lariston across the board.
Boom.
Yeah.
That's with a C. Sharla with a C.
Yeah.
Miles, where can people find
you? Well, before I tell people where we find us, Jack, on Twitter, I told the listeners that we would reveal our Zodiac signs today.
Right.
And I just want to make good on that promise. Now, this is a big moment for me because prior to this, no one knew my birthday. I didn't tell anybody. The government didn't even know. And now I'm willing, just because people have been asking on Twitter, I'm going to tell everybody, that I'm a Virgo. Okay.
Wow, knew it.
It's Virgo season.
I knew it.
Yes. Check out all the prolific names from that sign. Oh, you're booing the Virgos?
No, I said,
what's your
whoa.
Sign? Oh. Do you not believe in the Zodiac sign?
Of course I do.
Oh, interesting. Now, Jack, it's your turn.
You know what? I don't feel comfortable revealing my sign.
I told the people, Jack, I told the people that you
I know, you did that without consulting me.
Oh, you're fucked up.
I just...
You guys don't even give a shit about this. This
I've
is
never
serious
felt...
shit.
I'm serious. I know Jack doesn't. He's
I've gotta
actually
wait.
Protective.
I've got to wait a couple months and, you know, see how things are going in my life.
Okay.
Before I reveal
and
it.
I bet somebody now is on Twitter going to be like, his answer made it very clear what his sign is.
Yeah, no, I want to hear y'all guess. I want to hear you guys guess at what my sign
is. Yeah, but 1 in 12 chance.
Yeah.
Okay, but yeah, if you're looking for me and all things Virgo and hashtag Virgo season, shout out to all the Virgos, Beyonce, Nas, Michael Jackson.
is that true?
Mozart.
Damn.
I didn't know Beyonce was
that
a
is
Virgo.
A pretty good list.
Yeah, look, we're out here. Is it a coincidence? Yes. but if you're looking for me on Twitter and Instagram, at Miles of Gray.
The Beyonce of podcasting.
The Beyonce
As
of...
people always called you. That's crazy.
The Beyonce of the 50 through 100, top 100 on the news genre of podcasting.
There you go. You can find me at Jack_O'Brien on Twitter. You can find us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com. We also have other podcasts that we've been making and releasing that are really good, you guys. Ethnically Ambiguous, super producer Anna Hosnier and Shireen Yunus's podcast just dropped an episode today called We Are Syria that is really worth listening to.
Yeah.
And we're going to have them on a little later this week to further talk about that episode. Culture Kings is out here. Nerdificent is a show that we just launched with If You Watch Away and Danny Fernandez, two of you guys' favorite guests from the Daily Zeitgeist. Go check that shit out. They've got, I think, four episodes up now, and they're really, really good. They basically break down pop culture, nerd culture, things that you are sort of aware of but might not be fully versed on, and they just do a deep, deep dive. They've done episodes on cons, like conventions. They've done it on cosplay, like these things that I knew about but didn't know were like crazy super interesting until they talked to me about it. This week they're dropping an episode about the Marvel Cinematic Universe and just going in deep. So yeah, that is a great show. And we're about to launch a show called Behind the Bastards with Robert Evans from Cracked
Footnotes.
And we are we will link off to that in our footnotes. Where we also link off to the stories and information that we talked about in today's episode and the song that we ride out on. Miles, what are we going to ride out on?
Oh, today we're going to go out on a song by Abra called Pull Up. I think she's from New York, R&B artist, just another dope young artist coming out of New York, I think, and just got like really sort of simple 808 kind of hip-hop production. But it's just, you know, she's got a great voice. I like the melodic lines. There's some good harmony in there. I mean, not that it's full-on harmony, so don't come at me, all the vocalists. But again, this is Pull Up by Abra.
That's not technically harmonizing,
Miles. I
know,
yeah. Just like when I said the scatting that Samantha from Sex and the City wasn't scatting. It was actually jazz vocal something. Look, I'm sorry. I didn't know.
Jazz
but to
vocal
me,
diarrhea.
Yeah, it was it was a mess either way. But this is not a mess. This is pure, pure talent, pure excellence. This is Abra Pull Up.
Yeah, we'll also link off to the Arsenio Sax performance, ads from the terrible candidates in the GOP House races and Senate races. And going forward, we want to start linking off in the footnotes to maybe some candidates who need some support, who are good candidates, women of color. So, shout us out, any House candidates, Senate candidates who you think need some love, who probably aren't getting that super PAC support.
Yeah.
And
get the Zeitgang behind them.
Yeah. Give them the Zeitgang bump.
We'll push the whole election in one direction.
That's in our footnotes on dailyzeitgeist.com. And that's going to do it for today. We will be back tomorrow because it is a daily podcast. Talk to you guys then.